The lesson today is from Luke chapter 18, verses 9 to 14. He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, thieves, rogues, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of all my income. But the tax collector, standing far out, would not even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, but all who humble themselves will be exalted.
So I attended college at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama. Samford University was founded in 1842 in what was then called Eastlake, a little community out on the eastern side of what we now know as Birmingham. And it was founded by the Baptists, the Southern Baptists. So the college I attended was steeped in Southern Baptist theology and tradition. I had no idea. I didn't know that was the case when I applied. It was just the college campus I'd attended, Boise State, at and was led there. I applied, they let me in, they gave me money, and ta-da, you know. That's how that happened. But while I was there, there was this riff that was happening. I mean, you're partly Baptist, so you understand rifts and splits and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's just what Baptists are made of, right? It's like, we don't like that, we'll just do something else. We'll just expand the kingdom, as we call it. And so while I was there, there was this huge thing going on within the Southern Baptist Convention, and they thought there were too many liberals sneaking in and starting to change things, and so they wanted to stop that, and particularly with the universities. They really wanted to put a stop to that and keep it as conservative and as constrained as they possibly could. However, while I was there, Samford University made the decision to break from the Southern Baptist Convention, to go out and be an autonomous school. However, you know, one-third of the trustees would still be named by the convention and yada, 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 all those sort of things that needed to happen to keep the money flowing, right? We understand that. Well, there was this long-held tradition in the religion department that the religion professors had to be biblical literalists. There was an assumption that all of those well-to-do Southern Baptist professors were biblical literalists, which means they were to believe that every single word in the Bible was breathed from the mouth of God and landed there on that page. And anytime one of those professors would stray away or even hint that that might not be the case, oh, they had some trouble rain down on them. And there were students, it seemed like they were plants within each class, that they were just there as plants or as spies to find out if the professor was towing the line. They only did this in the religion department. Didn't happen in the English department, history, nowhere else. We even had a science department. Didn't happen there, but it happened in the religion department. Well, that one of the professors, his name was Karen Joynes. Karen Joynes stood about 6'4", 6'5", probably a good 230, 240 pounds, big man. Guess he had to be with a name like Karen, right? In East Tennessee is where he grew up. But he taught the Old Testament courses for the most part, Near East archaeology and the like. He was no biblical literalist, never had been. I don't know how he ever got the job, let alone tenure. Because by the time I was there, he had been there over 30 years teaching. And every year, he would get called into the provost's office for his interpretation of things. I'll go ahead and share confessionally, he was my favorite. There was something about him that I just gravitated toward. But in one of the classes I had with him, there was a student. Her name was she's still alive, so I shouldn't use her real name. We'll call her Allison. Her name was Allison Neal. And Allison was the plant in that particular class. And every week when we were in that class, she would just wait. She would just wait to challenge Dr. Joynes on some point. And after a while, you know, when it first started, it's like, wow, you know, this girl's all right. You know, she doesn't mind taking on the professor. This is interesting. But after 5 or 6 weeks of that, it's like, come on, lady. This is ridiculous. Like, let's just get on with it, right? But this one particular day, he made some comment that wasn't in line with the university's policies and understanding. And Allison got in an uproar. And she said, "You're wrong. You're wrong, Dr. Joynes. You're wrong." And he looked at her and he said, "Is that what you believe?" She said, "Yeah, you're wrong. And you have to tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm right." And we were sitting there, stunned. Let's pray. God, we're grateful for this day, for this word. May it work on us, and may we work with it. Amen. So whenever the violent and destructive forces of hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires, floods, war, and terrorism, whenever they ravage places and people known to us, there is a sense of indignation that looms around us. I know all of you are trying to figure out what happened with Allison. We'll get there. Gotta hold you. All those things happen. I mean, the images of families trapped on rooftops, huddled in neighborhood centers, rushing to nearby public arenas and flagging down any moving vehicle that can take them to safety, remain with participants and with onlookers. Even a few days ago, the forecast of rain brought back images of the fires and following floods and mudslides that toppled communities in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Not only will those images leave an indelible print in the mind, they sometimes call our reason for existence into question, and we ask, what is this all about? Why are these things happening? Can it stop? Won't it stop? How much destruction can we handle? And those are the questions I ask. Am I the only one? Okay, all right, just checking. I mean, we may never know the whole truth of who is to blame for the devastating after effects of the human-induced traumas on society, and they are many. We can blame the Republicans while they hold control of government. We can point fingers at the Democrats and their state of inertia while they were in control. We can holler at the millions who do not vote and wonder how their participation might have brought about different outcomes. We can disassociate with those who hold and espouse altogether different views from our own. We can continue to wrestle with what has happened to decimate ecosystems and annihilate once vibrant communities. But as we do so, we must remain mindful of two facts. The first is that finger pointing and name calling does not settle anything. In fact, such behaviors only serve to create greater divides and mistrust, which ultimately slows any potential progress. Allison said to Dr. Joynes, "You're wrong. You're wrong, Dr. Joynes. You're wrong. And you have to tell me I am right. You have to tell me I'm right. Say I'm right." And he stood up and he turned and he began to write something on the board. Almost like that scene with Jesus and the woman caught in adultery when her accusers brought her before him and he knelt down and he began to write something in the dirt. And all of her accusers dropped their stones and wandered away. The second thing to note is that now is not the time to decide who is wrong or who's right. We can do all those things, and our reality, beloved, our reality would still be exactly what it is. Pointing fingers and assigning blame does not solve our problems. Even if we cannot all agree to stop pointing and blaming, we can agree that suffering due to oppressive systems, structures, and discriminatory policies and attitudes are wrong. And since so many around us still suffer, that's where all of our support should be directed, be it economically, physically, fiscally, politically, and yes, even spiritually. That's where our energies and our support must be directed. So here it is. We're called to some things. We are called to ensure that every human being experiences a life marked by dignity and justice. We're called to it. Jesus tells the story of the Pharisee and the tax collector. I appreciated the emphasis you placed in that living. He tells the story of this Pharisee and this tax collector. The Pharisee goes up and presumably gets to the highest point that he possibly can to voice his prayer. And in his prayer, he names how great and wonderful he is. And he names all the wonderful things he has accomplished. Oh God, look at me. See how wonderful I am. Note all these great things that I do. I tithe and I tend to this and I tend to that. I check off my list one by one, and that makes me so great and so wonderful. And I know how great and I know how wonderful I am because I'm not like that guy. Well, that guy in Jesus' story was a tax collector. Now, tax collectors were not, well, not even in that story, even now. Tax collectors are not our favorite people, right? Have you ever met one? You probably have. They just didn't tell you they were one because they know better. But the tax collector is off seemingly to himself, owning his sin, so much so that he couldn't even look toward heaven. But ask, humbly ask, that God would have mercy on him, a sinner. And Jesus concludes his story by saying that this man, the one over there, went home justified. And the other one did not. Now, most of us readily identify with the tax collector and name our underdog status and the many ways we've been persecuted or excluded for one reason or another. And that's okay. Except that most of the time, we fail to name the times, spaces, and ways in which we are really more akin to the Pharisee. The one who looks down on another's circumstances and cannot begin to accept that where that person is may not be due to solely their own failings. That where they are right now may be the result of their best efforts to rise above the crappy circumstances of their birth. Now, there's a theological term for you. Crappy circumstances. And all of us have known some crappy circumstances. And if we started comparing crappy circumstances, I'm sure we could out-crap each other, you know, for quite a while. Right? I have more crap than you have. Well, I don't know. Let me share, you know? But some of that just came with our birth. And we spend a lifetime trying to overcome and undo. And sometimes our laws, our policies, and the posture of our society doesn't allow that to happen quite so easily. So we are called to live lives marked by righteousness, not to live lives marked by being right. Allison told Dr. Joines, "You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong, Dr. Joines. I'm right. I'm right, and you have to tell me that I'm right." And he stood up, and he turned around, and he began to write something on the board. All of our eyes widened. We did not know where this was going. There's this John Maxwell quote that says, "Earn the right to be heard by listening to others. Seek to understand a situation before making judgments about it." It's not in the Bible, but it could be. Assigning blame only serves to make us feel right. And to others, when we do that, to others we appear self-righteous, as if the sin of another is always greater than that of our own making. Righteousness, or living a righteous life, has so little to do with checking off doctrinal boxes or living up to biblical mandates, as we see with the Pharisee. Notice how in Jesus' story, he tells how the Pharisee named all of his accomplishments, but still had the wrong attitude and posture. So it wasn't all of his religious activities that mattered. It was his attitude and his behaviors toward others. The Pharisee came boldly before God, and in that moment, thank God that he was not like the tax collector. And the tax collector did not even find himself worthy enough to come close to the altar, nor did the tax collector think himself worthy enough to even raise his brow in what was perceived as the presence of God. Jesus says of the tax collector that he struck his chest and said, "God, show mercy to me, a sinner." And he says, "I tell you this, that this person went down to his home justified rather than the Pharisee." Yes, it was the tax collector who was justified. His actions deemed him righteous because he did not look down upon others. And you may say he was too low to look down on anybody. But all of us should realize that wherever we are, our role is not to stand over anyone, ever. Instead, he was willing and able to name his own shortcomings and ask for forgiveness and mercy because he knew he could do better. Yet he knew he could not do it on his own. So we are called to ensure that every human being experiences a life marked by dignity and justice. And we are called to live lives marked by righteousness, not to live lives marked by being right. Allison said to Dr. Joines, "You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong, Dr. Joines. I'm right. I'm right, and you have to tell me I'm right. And he stood up, and he turned around, and he began to write something on the board. And she said yet again, tell me I am right. And he turned around, and he looked at her, and he said, Miss Neal, you're right. And she said, I knew it. I knew it. As he turned back around to the board, he said, and it's such a small thing to be right when what God requires is righteousness. Thanks be to God. On this day, we celebrate Holy Communion together. So Libby will come forward and lead us in our confession.